We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio. I'm Patricia Karpus. In this series, we introduce you to real people with extraordinary stories and experts who share how meditation and mindfulness practices change our lives. Our podcast is brought to you by Meditation Studio, Apple's pick as one of the 10 best apps of the year. Why download the app? Because life is messy. We get stressed, anxious, have trouble sleeping, we work too hard, we deal with conflict, our hearts get broken, we worry about the state of the world. We meditate because we're human. Our app gives you hundreds of meditations from over 30 leading experts. It helps a lot. And if you haven't tried the app yet, you can now try it for free and explore a starter series plus a sample of some of our favorite guided meditations in the Discover collection. You may also want to check out our new meditation collections this year. Mindful eating, work, authentic leadership, and a special collection just for college students. There's also a new mindful work and sleep basics course. If you've already got the app, check out our new unguided meditation timer where you can create your own meditations with or without our brand new, pretty amazing music tracks. And don't forget the 8 free meditations on Alexa. Just ask her to enable Meditation Studio. Today's guest is Chinese medicine expert, acupuncturist, and Taoist Justin Ehrlich. Justin shares why he fell in love with Chinese medicine and Taoist philosophy, how it's helped him personally, and how he uses this to help his clients heal physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Justin feels that it gives him a degree of calmness and focus, as well as the capacity to heal trauma and to navigate life more easily. He talks about the importance of slowing down and observing ourselves, and why we need to be more inwardly honest and vulnerable with ourselves. Now, here's Justin. Justin, thank you so much for being on Untangle today. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
I am really excited because I don't think we've had anyone who has this expertise that you have in Chinese medicine. So I am really curious about that. And I also want to understand, how did you originally get into this field?
My story around Chinese medicine is random, if you will. I got exposed to martial arts as a kid, as a young boy who was interested in sports. And I had a fascination with what you would see in all the kung fu movies that was fake and all that sort of stuff, but magical nonetheless. So I started studying martial arts. And there is a branch of martial arts or a side of martial arts that includes medicine, meditation, mindfulness practices. And I got exposed to it and I was fascinated by it. How do you treat bruises, injuries? How do you treat a bruised rib or a broken rib and that sort of stuff? And I loved it.
How old were you?
I started training martial arts when I was 12, almost 13. I drank the Kool-Aid and there was no turning back. I didn't plan on studying Chinese medicine as my career choice. I went and I worked as a translator and did office work and was unhappy sitting at a desk all day. And one of my friends who knew I was studying Chinese medicine of my own sort of like hobby said to me one day, just like, why don't you just go back to school for Chinese medicine? And it was like a little bomb went off in my head and my life path changed.
What was it in your background or even growing up or sort of internal life that made you feel like you were so interested in Chinese medicine? And were you healing
old wounds, or were you just fascinated by how different it was?
I would say, like, on a conscious level, I was drawn to it because of a fascination for how different it was, how its worldview was so much more inclusive of the entire human experience. Both my parents are PhDs. I grew up in a very scientific household, and we didn't have an organized religion that we practiced or any sort of spiritual practice. It was a worldview that just made so much more sense to me of how it worked with the emotions and the spirit and the body. It just made sense. Like, why would you ignore part of who you are?
Were you longing for some spirituality, or did you have any kind of spirituality in your upbringing?
No, we didn't have any. And so I would say, yes, I would think I was. And I certainly had my own history with trauma, as most people do growing up. I was in a broken household, a divorced household, which is quite common in this country. But I also had a good childhood. I don't consider myself a victim on any level. But I had my childhood traumas. I had my heartbreaks. I had my frustrations with my stepbrothers and misunderstandings with my parents, as everyone does. And I had my teenage angst, I think, as most of us go through. I was certainly drawn to some of that. But there was the passion for sort of the physical practice of those routines or of those practices, the physical movement of them, that gave me a certain degree of calmness and focus and capacity to navigate life. And I just quickly realized I was a happier person, a nicer person, a more peaceful person when I was doing these practices.
When you first started studying Chinese medicine, had you already done some of the practices through your martial arts program or through other programs?
Exactly. So I had done martial arts for years. We'd studied meditation. I had done a lot of full contact fighting in the ring or in controlled environments with gloves, and also bare knuckle fighting. So pretty intense stuff, which ironically develops a certain degree of peace inside, even though it's very hard on the body. And you would do meditation to help support the body through that type of training and that sort of trauma, so that the fighting didn't become a trauma to you. I was interested in the medicine for treating all the bruises and the injuries that occurred in the process as well. And so it just sort of grew out of that in this organic way.
It's interesting to note that there's this dichotomy, right, between your fighting and martial arts, just that idea of fighting. And then you're also meditating to kind of heal the bruises and the fighting. Is there some metaphor with that that you felt strongly about?
There's a classic saying in a lot of Buddhist martial arts of the fist and Zen are one. And you can go back to some of the other sayings from Zen Buddhism, like chop wood and carry water. There is a certain meditative quality to any repetitive practice that we do. So if you're standing there and you're doing a punch 5,000 times, you can drop into a certain meditative space, even though you're not necessarily sitting on the cushion. And that focus is also necessary when you're fighting another person, because if you're not paying attention, you're going to get punched in the face. And so you get a very quick negative feedback loop. It requires concentration. But I was also very fortunate that the people that I trained with, even though we may have beat each other up, we also loved each other and we cared for each other, and there was a deep respect. And so it was never, even though it was sort of physically violent, it was never emotionally violent. It wasn't abusive, even though from the outside, it might have looked abusive, but the degree of respect and camaraderie and the desire of, like, I will train hard so that you get better, you will train hard so that I get better. There was this sort of mutual support that was there. So even though it was seemingly violent, I don't have much experience with it being a violent practice, ironically.
Yeah. If you had to articulate how it changed you or how your practices continue to change you as a human being, how would you articulate that?
It touches a certain degree of peace within me when I'm able to be present in my physical body. It allows me to sort of get out of my mental body, out of my brain, out of my stories, out of my pain, and touch something a little bit bigger and more spacious. But I think in a lot of the meditative traditions, we see this crossing of the use of the physical body to help get us out of our mental stories and the pain that we feel in this, and all of that sort of stuff. And I really think for myself, that was like my first gateway into the meditative world, even though at the time I didn't know that's what it was, right? I was too young and wasn't ready to sit on the cushion, but I was training for meditation long before I even really knew what I was getting myself into.
So you feel it's changed you dramatically.
Yeah, I would not be the same person that I am if I had not done it. On a personal level, the Chinese approach, one of the things that I love so deeply about it is their meditative tradition, at least within the Taoist paradigm, is deeply influenced by Chinese medicine. And so there's this beautiful crossover between honoring our physical health, our emotional health, and our cultivation of relationship to something bigger than us, to mm-hmm. divinity or to spirit, and that you can use the physical to support the emotional, or you can use the emotional to support the spiritual. And there's this sort of capacity to side process something so that if my emotional experience is really triggered, if I'm really just suffering emotionally because of any reason, I can turn and use my physical body to help ease the pain in my emotional experience.
How does that work? Yeah.
So like to draw from personal experience, because I've done martial arts forever, it is my go-to phase one therapy whenever I need some degree of personal therapy. So if I am triggered, if I am suffering, rather than necessarily leaning into whatever my pain is and sitting on the cushion and being fully present with it, I'll go work out. Mm. And whether I do some forms, whether I do some sparring with a student, whether I work on a heavy bag, whatever it is, I'll just go move my physical body to disperse some of that angst that is stored within my body that is really just coming from my emotional state. And at the end of working out, it's sort of like you let the pressure cooker vent some steam. And then at the end of that, I can sit and meditate and really start to lean into whatever my trigger was and start to be able to approach it without it being so overwhelming or so all-encompassing.
I love what you're saying about it gets dispersed. I mean, I think that's why people go running or do whatever it is. I mean, some people don't have the full practice, but they know that they've got to move in order to let go of some of these triggers that you're talking about.
Exactly. I mean, we are this complex being, and we know from the Western side of psychoneuroimmunology of how our emotions stimulate hormone release and change all these chemicals in our body. And exercise also does the same thing. So if the emotions trigger something, why can't the physical exercise, the physical movement of the body be the release for the emotions?
We know this
from science side of things.
Right, but would somebody be able to do that on their own, or it's the philosophy and the other work that you do in and around the physical exercise? Because some people might hear this and think, well, I already go running when I'm feeling all angsty and that I feel better, and so I'm good to go.
Yeah, I think in our intrinsic intelligence, our innate intelligence, we know that we need to move when we're feeling frustrated.
Yeah.
But I think there is an importance in differentiating that when I go work out when I'm triggered, that takes the pressure out of the pressure cooker, but it doesn't take the ingredients out of the pressure cooker. Going for that run or going to the gym or going and hitting the heavy bag or whatever it is so that I can actually do the work, but it's not the work itself. And I think it's really important to differentiate that.
Right.
If we're going to drop it into the idea of medication, taking a medication to relieve our anxiety, having a drink to relieve our anxiety, going for a run to relieve our anxiety, none of those actually treat the source of the anxiety, but they mitigate the intensity of the symptoms we're experiencing. It's really good to sort of honor, we want to have a way to mitigate the intensity that's healthy, that supports our health in the long run. And we also want to not confuse ourselves to thinking, oh, I go work out and I feel better, but I never really address the underlying cause.
So is that why you mix your Chinese medicine with coaching as well? When people hear Chinese medicine, they might assume that you're giving Chinese medicine to take home with you to heal, but yet you've got this whole process that you're teaching with your clients. Can you talk a little bit about that and also what types of conditions they're coming in with and how you're treating those?
You know, one of my favorite sayings is cultivate, don't medicate. The idea is really that from the perspective of Chinese medicine, at least that I follow, there is this overlying view that we are supposed to go through certain life lessons and grow because of them, to heal because of them. Even though the event, the trigger might be traumatic, we're actually going to become a more complete, a more loving, a more realized, to use the Taoist term, person. Because of this experience, we will know ourselves and our place in the world better because of it. But the medication, whether that be an acupuncture treatment, or that be some essential oils, or that be herbal tea, or that be whatever, they don't do the healing. They're just tools to help us lean into that experience so that we can heal ourselves. Fundamental to Chinese medicine is that we are our only healers. I don't heal anybody. I don't have this divine capacity to take away somebody else's trauma. But I can sit with them. I can hold sacred space with them. I can share my experiences. I can let them know they're not alone. And I can also give them tools that will make that process easier. And that's where the use of the Taoists were basically sort of the original biohackers, if you will, where they found all these different tools to make the path of self-cultivation more efficient. So it didn't have to be so difficult, because it's not easy to process our traumas, especially when people do have very substantial traumas of abuse and those sorts of things. We don't want to take the intensity of those things lightly. Asking a client to sort of confront their childhood abuse or a major traumatic event without giving them the tools to be present with it isn't a very kind thing to do, and often isn't a very safe thing to do as well. It can be overwhelming. So a lot of people I work with have childhood traumas. They could have been abused. They could have bad breakups, betrayals. And a lot of the time it's working through this process of opening up into ourselves, of our own self-judgment around the world and the things that are considered unsafe or bad. And how do we begin to come out of our cage and be able to love ourselves and the world more?
Do you feel that some of these tools are similar to what we learn in mindfulness? Is that something that you've studied as well?
Absolutely. There is this fundamental to that idea of looking at the physical experience and the emotional experience is sort of like, as we are triggered, can we observe where does that show up in our body? Can we slow down and really feel like, oh, I'm holding this emotional guarding in my right chest or in my left thigh or wherever that is, and learning to work with the physical body to learn to see like, oh, this is what happens in my body when I'm triggered, or these are the things that do trigger me. And it is very much a mindfulness practice where we have to slow down and observe and be willing to be inwardly honest with ourselves about what our actual experience is, which is a tough thing. I think it's an area that I see a lot of people get stuck, is this sort of space of inner honesty or inner vulnerability.
And just being with that.
Yeah, of just being able to be honest with ourselves about, wow, I'm really triggered right now.
Yeah.
And not judging ourselves or not being caught in the story of judging the other person or the event or whatever, of just being like, this really brings up some pain for me. This brings up some fear or some anger or whatever it is.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you've ever thought about therapy and haven't quite jumped in yet, it may be the right time to explore BetterHelp. Whether you're looking for new coping skills or to improve a relationship, or maybe dealing with some social anxiety or just need to recharge your batteries so you can be the best version of yourself, therapy is great. And this could be just the right time to give BetterHelp a shot. Finding a therapist through BetterHelp is easy. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and they do their best to match you with a licensed therapist that's a great fit for you. Visit betterhelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/untangle. Now back to our show.
What is your thought on depression and suicide, and not only just depression, but just that people have to hide their true feelings and present themselves in the world as someone that they're not really feeling like inside? And maybe that dissonance just creates real, I don't know, havoc, so much havoc that they feel. What is it that you think is driving this increase in the suicide rates? I know you're not an expert on suicide, but I'm just curious how someone that is so focused on Chinese medicine and all of the internal honesty and vulnerability, how do you think about that?
It's not my specialty per se, and I think it's a very complex thing. We live in this world that we're surrounded by this constant array of images of like the perfect life, whether that be on Instagram or Facebook or the television. And what that exposure to those images do is they develop very subtly this sense of internal judgment towards ourselves, because there is this constant comparison, even if we're not
it's so true.
Consciously doing it, but it develops an inner judgment. a disapproval of self, a sense of failure of self. There is this dissipation of the idea of what Buddhism would call the Sangha, or a sense of community, where it's safe to share what our experiences are, because everybody is competing to have the next best picture on Instagram or whatever. We don't have as much space for deep, heartfelt communication and external vulnerability. And we don't have leaders to sort of hold that sacred space in the way that sort of historically, if you went for confession, the priest during confession would hold sacred space for you to share what your pains were and give you some guidance and some feedback, or the way that a village elder would. I think we have, on a very gross level, a big separation between our physical, emotional, and spiritual lives. And I don't think humans are meant to really survive without that integration. We are all three of those. So I think ignoring any one part of what we are is just intrinsically unhealthy. Then we have the whole, a bigger picture of diet and lifestyle and medication within the Western community, within civilization as a whole, where we're being medicated in the foods that we eat, and then we're getting medications to treat those medications. And it's just this downstream spiral. And in Chinese medicine, there is this image that any pathogen, whether it be a virus, a bacteria, an emotion that is unpleasant, anything that comes into our internal world that doesn't get fully expressed and released eventually becomes toxic. It ferments, it decays, it becomes something that is damaging to the body on a much deeper level. And as a society, I think we are really suffering that emotionally. We have all of these emotions that we're experiencing that we don't even know we're experiencing. And they just sort of ferment inside of us. And I think at a certain point, depression at one level and suicide at a much deeper level is almost a natural expected result, until we start to really honor that we're having these experiences and learn how to cope as a society. Regrettably, I think we will see more of it.
It's really absolutely heartbreaking. It is depressing. And would you call yourself a Taoist? Is that right?
Yeah, I would say if I'm of any religion, I would say I'm a Taoist. Yeah, some people will call it Taoism, some will Taoism. It's just a pronunciation thing.
So we're talking here about these, all of the different, our internal world, our internal emotions, and how certain things become toxic if they're not released. I think I read somewhere that with this worldview, you start by understanding your major life events and what are the different things that have formed your journey and how that becomes what you call patterning. Where do you begin with all of this? Talk about this sort of social and emotional patterning that you study as a part of the Taoist philosophy.
The basic idea is that we are all a unique spirit, a unique being, a unique creature, whatever we would like to label ourselves as. And in that, we have some shared humanity with other people. So we share the genetics of our parents and our grandparents and our great-grandparents. But then there's also something about us that makes us different than other people in our family, and that would be the spirit component. And the Taoists really look at each human being as a mixture of our sort of physical genetic inheritance and our sort of unique personality, our unique spirit. So what you're trying to do within that paradigm is help a person learn to understand what their unique blend of those two things are. You could look at it in terms of sort of epigenetics. What genes did they inherit and what genes are they turning on based on their lifestyle behaviors? And it's also sort of like looking at the evolution of their life. What were the big turning points, the big events that really changed them for the better or for the worse, that allowed them to become a particular way? And that can be looking back at trauma, seeing what becomes our triggers. And it can also be the things that cracked us open to ourselves so that we could blossom, we could flower into being what we're meant to be as well.
But what is the difference between someone who has these deep moments or these deeper life events? What's the difference between someone who gets crushed by them versus someone who becomes resilient and thrives from them?
I think a lot is dependent on the person and the community that's around them, the tools that they have, because we all have traumatic events. We all have moments that are crushing to us. It could be the death of a parent. It could be a divorce. It could be a betrayal. And they can really rock our sense of self. And I think there is a side of our participation that maybe something starts out as a very deep wound, but our willingness to sort of be present with it and honor the experience allows us to come out on the other side actually more whole than we were before the injury even occurred, if that makes sense. We can go through life and have some trauma, some triggers that develop, then they will lead to certain life patterns or certain life choices that we see often. Relationship, of course, is a great one to look at as a sort of crucible of how those things show up, where we hear the stories that you marry somebody that's like your mother or somebody that's like your father, only to later realize that and go through healing some childhood wound via the relationship. But it takes going into that marriage or into that relationship to trigger something to come out of latency that you weren't even aware of, that was a trauma from your childhood that developed a certain pattern. And then if you're able to do the work around that, you can actually come out of that much more integrated as a person and not carrying this history of trauma with you anymore. And a lot of the work I do is trying to help people with that process.
And do you work with couples to try and heal those wounds? Or it must get confusing for couples when one person is going through sort of the healing trauma that's triggered by the actual relationship, but the other person isn't really clear about what is happening.
Couples work is certainly
challenging.
Maybe as complex as it gets. Yes. Right. Yes, it is tough work because one person triggers the other, which then triggers the other back, and it gets very challenging. People like Sue Johnston or Harville Hendrix, they've all done a lot, I think, of great work for helping people learn how to kind of break out of the skipping record that gets triggered in relationship stuff. And I recommend their books to any of my patients that are working through relationship stuff. I tend to work only with individuals, though I will work with both parts of a couple, but I will work with them individually.
Got it.
And there is this fine line of how do we hold space for our partner, knowing that they're imperfect in the way that we're imperfect, and also hold space for our needed boundaries.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Holding space for your partner. And is it the same question as asking how much separateness and how much connectedness
exactly
one needs in a relationship? And so is there an answer to that question?
Well, like most things, I think it's always situational, but I think we can honor the right of our partner to have their journey, but also not take on their journey, not let their journey become our journey. And so you can honor the suffering of your partner when they are triggered and just connect into their suffering and care about them, love them, and at the same time, not let them come home and punch you in the face, right?
Well,
to use that as an extreme example, to be like, okay, I can see that you're triggered right now, and I know how bad it feels when I'm triggered. We know how bad pain hurts. And so we can honor their experience, but also draw a boundary and be like, but this is your pain, and I'm not going to take it on, and I'm not going to let you dump your pain on me at the same time. And it's messy, and it's
messy.
Difficult.
Yeah, these are slippery situations, aren't they?
They are. Sometimes there's this idea that it's not supposed to be messy.
Yeah.
We're supposed to be able to do stuff. And I try to always warn my clients of like, watch for those should statements, because it should be easier. It shouldn't be this way. The shoulds and the should nots are where our inner judgment is sort of leaking through and polluting the interaction with the person.
But we'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping, available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
When you are dealing with that client that is going through something, and it gets blurry, like your client is triggered by something that their partner has done and they are really dealing with their own situations, how do you guide your client on whether it's about them or it's about their partner?
Well, at a very basic level, anytime I'm triggered, it's my stuff.
Okay.
It doesn't really matter who causes it or what causes it. It's the fact that I'm triggered means there's something there that I need to look at within myself.
But would you also want to consider that maybe that partner isn't right for you? Or is that just too black and white? Like, how do you know when? Because I'm sure a lot of people come into you with that question of, yes, of course, it's if you have any kind of a spiritual practice at all, then you've been trained to look at your own behavior inside of a relationship, any relationship, work or romantic.
Yeah.
But then I think it gets a little bit confusing because there are situations that you should leave.
Absolutely.
So what happens in those discussions?
I think it's, for me, I don't look for a partner to not have issues and not have triggers.
Yeah.
But I look for their willingness to be honest with themselves about their triggers and their willingness to share that with me. I think if both partners are willing to be sort of inwardly vulnerable with themselves and are willing to hold space for their partner to be vulnerable back with them, then you can work through most things, unless you happen to have very divergent lifestyle choices, right? Where like one person wants to live here, one wants to live there, or whatever that is. So assuming that's not the case, for myself, I know that like my own path of cultivation or of healing, I take my time. I'm not quick to get all the lessons in my life. It takes me banging my head against the wall a few times before I finally like, oh, that wall hurts.
Right. And most of us, I think, are like that.
Right. And if we know that, if we're honest with ourselves about that, of like, wow, it's taken me this long to even figure out this simple thing, then how can I judge my partner because they're taking a while to get something?
Right.
I mean,
that's true.
The true nature of a blind spot is that it's a blind spot. Of course, you don't see it. And if you've ever discovered one of your own blind spots, it's a lot easier to have compassion for somebody who hasn't yet discovered one of theirs.
Yeah.
Because when you see it, eventually you're just like, oh my God, how did I miss that? That was really apparent. But the truth is it wasn't. Part of the beauty of Chinese medicine is that the acupuncture channels represent these deeper philosophical statements about the human experience. And when you study the deeper classical side of the medicine, you get this gateway into how to work with the emotional journey or the spiritual journey, the psycho-emotional journey of a person in a really beautiful way. And interestingly enough, the term for an acupuncture channel in Chinese is the word jing. And jing is also the word that is used for any sacred text. So the Bible is a jing, the Quran is a jing, and Taoism, the Tao Te Ching. They're all considered sacred texts, sacred stories. And each acupuncture channel is also considered that. It's sort of a representation of a journey. When you understand that part of it, it gives you a way to use the physical body, the pathways that are there, or the acupuncture channels that are there, also to sort of engage with the story of a person's life, which is very beautiful, very empowering.
I love what you were just saying about a gateway to working with our own journey. And also it creates a language to understand things. There are a lot of different modalities, I guess, or philosophies. And I find this one so interesting because it creates such a integrated, all-encompassing, holistic language with which to understand things. And I think that's when you and I first spoke, that's what was so compelling to me.
That's exactly what I geek out about. That's what I'm forever a nerd of with this medicine, and why it really moves my spirit so much.
Yeah.
Is because I see the logic of it, and it feels, to learn the language to me feels very empowering. It gives me hope that I can navigate the bumps and bruises of life, which like all of us, I've had plenty of.
Yes. Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, this is why we fall apart and we come back together. And it's great to be able to have these tools in your little toolkit. And there is something else that you have written about that I think maybe it is also this language or this way to look at things so holistically. And that's the nine heart pains. Is that like Taoist philosophy or is that a Chinese medicine? Is it a really important part of understanding Taoism?
It's just a tool to help us understand what theme is showing up in our life. It's a way to break down different facets of our life. And so we know kind of what is coming up. Most of the language of Chinese medicine and Taoism is about trying to give us a way to really understand what's going on so that we can do whatever work is necessary. Once we have the perspective of understanding where we're getting stuck or what facet of our life we're getting stuck in, most of us have tools that we can draw upon. But it's sort of when you're in the midst of the struggle, we often just can't see up from down and left from right. And so being able to sort of categorize things or get some perspective on it can be very helpful, can be very empowering. And so the nine heart pains represent the different areas of our life that can be themes that show up. The nine areas are health and wealth, prosperity, relationships, children or creativity, travel, the world, the knowledge or our career, wisdom, and then coming into ourselves, our sense of home. And it's really like, as an example for myself, I'm blessed to have pretty good health on a physical level. My emotional health has certainly been up and down at different types of my life, but overall, I'm a pretty healthy person. Mm-hmm. But the health palace is a big one in my life because health is my career. I care about the health of others. I'm a caretaker. And so even though I may not be dealing with physical health issues myself, I'm surrounded by health and my passion for life is the health of others. So health is still a big part of my life. And none of them are better and none of them are worse. It's just a matter of helping us to know what part of our life is showing up right now so we can focus our efforts to address it.
Yeah. So you use all of these tools when you are coaching and then working with people on a Chinese medicine plan.
Exactly. The goal in general is that we'll often have many symptoms that are showing up in our life, in our career, in our relationships, in our physical health, in our emotional health with ourselves, that all relate back to one sort of root cause. Mm-hmm. My job is to try to give them one thing to focus on that may address five different parts of their life by doing just this one thing. Rather than do this one thing for one part of your life, do something else for another part of your life. You're always trying to, Chinese medicine calls it the root versus the branches. Mm. The branches are what people come in for. My shoulder hurts. I have insomnia. I keep getting into bad relationships and I can't keep a job. Those are all branches. They're just symptoms. And often underneath all of that is some sort of life event or trauma or pattern that is triggering manifestations in many different directions, but it's coming from one source. And so we're trying to help the person make those connections so they can just be more efficient with their efforts.
I wanted to ask you before we close, I know you just are launching this whole new line of teas.
Yes.
And so will you just share with us a little bit about the line of teas and why they're so important to you and how they will help us with our life's journey?
Absolutely. It's been a long passion of mine based on my own personal experience of working through a divorce and the trauma that went with that whole process and the self-discovery and healing that came out of that process as well. And the Taoists have this immensely rich tradition that's known as external alchemy, of using external substances to change our internal experience. They also did a lot of work with plant materials as ways to support emotional development and spiritual development. And they weren't a big proponent of the very powerful entheogens like ayahuasca or mushrooms or peyote or those sorts of things. Rather, what they did was they combined herbal teas, minerals, with meditation techniques, with mindfulness techniques. And Taoism uses cognitive therapy, where you're analyzing yourself, you're understanding yourself using your brain, but they also do compassionate type meditations, visualizations, those sorts of things as well. And the idea for me, an area that is just, I think, very needed in our society and an area I'm very passionate about, is this idea of cultivation, not medication. Because so many of the medications that are out there, whether they be a pharmaceutical or they be Chinese herbs, are about treating the person, giving them medicine to make the symptoms go away. And I'm just not so certain that emotional health and spiritual health is really something that you can treat to make go away. I think really healing comes from our own work and presence with ourselves and the support of the community around us, the teachers around us, the therapists, the guides that help us to connect some of the dots when we don't know how to do that ourselves. And so these T's are really meant to be used with our regular meditative practices or our mindfulness practices, our work with a therapist, mind mapping, journaling, the work that we do to heal ourselves. And over the years, I've sort of found clients to be in one of three spaces, basically. One is that we know there's something there, but we can't quite place our finger on it. We have our blind spot, and we need to invite whatever is there inside of us to come out more. In the Western paradigm, that's known as opening Pandora's box, right? Is let it out of the cage. The other side of it is that it can be out of the cage, but we're too reactive to it. Whatever our triggers are just too intense to lean into. Most meditative traditions will talk about this process of being soft and leaning into what our pain is, being present with it, and just softening into that experience. And any of us that have been through intense triggers and wanted to sit on the cushion and lean into our pain know that it's not easy, right? There's a lot of resistance there. There's a lot of pain there, especially with people who have been through very traumatic events like abuse and those sorts of things. And so the other formula is to make that process a little bit softer so we can, instead of letting something out of the box, we can drop into that box ourselves. It allows us to move inward into ourselves more softly, more gently. And then the third T is one for just cultivating light and longevity when things are going well and we want to support that process.
Yeah.
A T for that. And the oils, they use essential oils and herbal teas for that process. And again, it's tapping into this sort of Chinese medicine Taoist perspective that the body is also a sacred landscape. And so you take the essential oils and you apply them to acupuncture points as sort of a chemical acupuncture.
Oh, interesting.
Where you're connecting into your body. You can think of it as tapping into the chakra system or into the nervous system. And we know that scent affects the brain and affects our perception of reality. But it's a way to sort of have a ritual approach to our meditative practice, to our introspective practice. It's really quite remarkable that the Taoists thousands of years ago figured this stuff out of ways to make that process gentler for us, but also more effective so we can make more progress and not have to bang our head against the wall 100 times before we get the idea that hitting our head on the wall hurts.
Thank you so much for being with us on the show today and for sharing all of this amazing wisdom. I'm just so grateful. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really a pleasure and an honor to be here and to share this.
Thanks so much to Justin for being on Untangle today. You can visit his website, justinerlich.com, for information on his work and to buy his teas. If you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email me at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And if you have a minute, will you subscribe to our podcast? And every rating helps, so give us a rating. And I hope you'll download Meditation Studio in the App Store. We'll see you next time.